Hello and welcome to the German New Medicine Stories podcast. May listening bring liberation and lightness to your healing journey. Please note that nothing that I or any of my guests say here is or should be misinterpreted as medical information or advice. These are personal stories, not prescriptions. So today I'm sharing an interview that I did with Sarah Temte about how she resolved her chronic and really debilitating migraines and some sort of other symptoms that were associated with the migraines, and really her experience of going from, you know, near constant symptoms to none in just a matter of a few months of like really dedicated attention to unraveling her conflicts and the tracks that had, you know, built up over time. And, you know, just to say here at the beginning that the special biological program that we are discussing primarily today is not the only special biological program that can create the symptom of migraines. Migraines are sort of one of those symptoms where it's not necessarily super cut and dry. There are multiple different potential biological programs that could create the symptom of a migraine. But the one we're going to be talking about today, which is a powerlessness frontal fear conflict, is very common. So if you suffer from migraines, definitely, you know, scan your life for this. And it's likely that, you know, if you're not personally a migraine sufferer, if you have people in your life who do struggle with consistent migraines, that you will recognize this particular pattern in how they relate to the world. And there's also just so many nuggets in this conversation about how to go about finding your conflicts and really, you know, taking a fine-tooth comb, you know, over these moments in your life, and how you can really, how you can and how you really need to get to the granular root of the conflict. And yeah, a lot of that process is discussed in this conversation. So yeah. Let's dive.
So I was very much in a holistic way of viewing the world, viewing my body. Even the chronic symptoms that I was experiencing, I hadn't pursued getting a diagnosis or a label for them. But I had never heard of German New Medicine before. And I just found it on Instagram. Like, I just started seeing people talking about it. And this was in 2020. Yeah. And I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with it. I was, you know, listening to podcasts or watching YouTube videos or looking through the website. And it resonated for me. Like, the theory and the concept of it resonated. And I just felt really frustrated because I didn't see how I could apply it to my life. Yeah. Number one, I didn't understand how the resolution worked mechanically. And then number two, my chronic symptoms felt so constant and also so kind of vague and widespread that I was really frustrated by the stories that I was reading, where it was like, I had a pimple on my left cheek. And so like, I can trace it to this exact thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so frustrating because I'm just in pain. Yeah. Like, it feels like my whole body hurts, and it feels like my whole body hurts all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to navigate tracks. I don't know how to navigate healing conflicts. Like, I was kind of just looking at it from the outside. It felt like this is really cool. I love the idea of this level of like body wisdom and sovereignty. And I am completely at ground zero when it comes to like translating it.
Yeah.
To my life.
I feel like such a common experience. Oh man, that was totally me.
Yeah. So I think it just kind of like sat in my brain as like a concept for a few years. Mm-hmm. And so like, I followed some people who talked about it sometime, but I was also still very much in that like, holistic fear mode, where I was like, I can't drink tap water, and I have to have, you know, I have to travel with a suitcase of supplements everywhere I go, and have like all of my like tinctures and devices within arm's reach for if my pain gets really bad. And
yeah, that was like how you were managing the symptoms.
Yeah. And like, to be clear, my symptoms were pretty intense. Like I was in chronic pain. About, 15 to 20 days a month. So it wasn't every single day, but like a large percentage of the time at, probably like a level 6 or 7. So it wasn't like excruciating, but it was very life dominating. And I'd found some ways of managing it. You know, I'd found like, okay, I feel a little better when I eat this way, probably in large part because I was avoiding some fear and some fear tracks. Right. And I think I had done a decent amount of emotional work through different healers and providers. And so I think like intuitively we'd gotten to some of the tracks and like some of the conflicts, and I'd emotionally unraveled certain layers without having all of the German New Medicine pieces. And so I'd gotten to this point where I felt like, okay, if I do everything right, I can feel okay, a third of the time. Yeah. But it was like a really tight grip on everything.
The image that I've had recently of thinking about, my own experience with that, and obviously just talking to so many other people who share this experience, it's almost, it's like, yes, maybe I'm quote unquote healthy, but it's kind of, it's all stuck together with masking tape, I have to
really it's like the house of cards. It's like, God, don't breathe on me because I'm gonna fall apart. So I think I was just like aware of German New Medicine in the back of my mind and really open to it and really like hopeful that I could someday connect the dots, because I didn't feel like I was in like freedom or solution mode. That's kind of where I was at when you first opened up session. So that's how we first connected. I didn't know what to expect going into that conversation, because, I'm sure so many people can relate. Like, I've spent so much money and invested so much time and invested so much hope in such a wide range of like modalities and practices and substances. And so I was really hopeful, really excited, and also like, is this just going to be another thing? Is this German New Medicine thing just something that works for other people, or just something that I don't understand, or just something that's like a cool idea, but in practice falls apart? That's where I was when we got on the conversation. We started with going back to like, hey, where did these chronic symptoms first show up? And that brought us back to when I was, it was about 10 years ago, I had graduated from high school and I moved to Mexico, to do some volunteer work. And, I was kind of teaching and volunteering in this orphanage.
And maybe for like a little background piece, I think I remember like you came from quite a like Christian sheltered background. So this was kind of like your first sort of like foray into the world in a way.
Yeah. This was this huge adventure. This was this huge thing where in my mind, I thought I was going to make this huge difference and do this huge thing. There was so much ego involved, like looking back. I thought I was going to go like save people. And what I found out was I was woefully underprepared for like the human realities of poverty. And this was an area where there was, just so much, generational poverty, drug cartels that were really dominant. There was a lot of prostitution in the area. So there were a lot of like children there that were, had massive abandonment issues. And I was this sheltered, super privileged, religious 18-year-old who knew nothing about the world, like coming in with zero tools, with zero, really understanding of how to help. And so, and the organization turned out to be pretty messy and dysfunctional as well. And so I felt like such a fish out of water. I could tell that I was not making a difference. I felt so powerless to actually make a meaningful difference in these children's mm-hmm. lives. I was like, they need so much more than I can possibly give them here.
Yeah.
And
it sounded quite a lot. We don't necessarily have to go into all the details, but I remember like quite a lot of kind of different situations of shock, right? And being caught off guard and just like, whoa, like this is what I was expecting.
I had such a like whitewashed vision of what this would look like. And there was a lot of violence between the children. There was not enough staff. The people who were leading the orphanage, who were the only people who spoke English, which is, you know, my native language. I was kind of at like a second grade level of Spanish. They left like mm-hmm. a day after I got there. They forgot that I was coming. So there was like a lack of preparation there. And so I just felt super alone and under-resourced, and like my vision, my like big idealistic vision was just like crumbling in my hands. About like a month into being there, I got a phone call from my mom letting me know that my grandmother had been diagnosed with leukemia and given like less than a month to live. And so my mom was like, we're flying down to Arizona. That's where my grandparents were living at the time. And she's like, if you want, you know, a chance to say goodbye, like you're going to have to come up really fast. And so, you know, I made the decision right there, like absolutely. And decided that I would, you know, be leaving within about a week from there, you know, to go, you know, see my grandparents and get a chance to say goodbye to my grandma and be with family. And that night I got like violently ill. And I was like hallucinating. I was vomiting. I had horrible fever and chills. Like I remember just like a stray cat crawling over my foot and just like not even having the energy to like kick it off my bed. And it was just like not a good situation. A few days of just like delirium ended up convalescing for a few days and then flying back to the States. And that was the end of my time there. And that ended up like looking back being kind of like the start, like about timeline wise, the start of a lot of chronic issues. So when we first talked, we were like, okay, maybe that's the thing. And we kind of started to try to unravel the layers of what was the shock there. Cause there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'd looked at it before with like coaches doing kind of like trauma work or emotion code work or inner child work, you know, a lot of people kind of centered in on the pending death of my grandma being like the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of this theory in the back of my head of like, oh yeah, that's like the big trauma. That's mm-hmm. the whatever. But I also knew that that didn't make sense through the lens of German New Medicine, because that wasn't like a resolution. That was like a that would have been the shock. So I was like, why did I get sick?
So because in order, you know, the symptoms that you got, like, you know, that evening, right after you got the call,
yeah,
those were resolution symptoms. So
right,
there was a conflict that had been going on, and something about finding out that your grandma had to die really wasn't that your grandma had to die. It was that you had a journey, yes, or a path out of your
correct. Yeah. And so it ended up being the thread there. Yeah. Wasn't my grandma's diagnosis. It was, I get to go home. You know, I get to back to a place where I feel like I belong. I get to like end this chapter here. And that was like such a light bulb moment for me in that first conversation of like realizing the way that German New Medicine works is not like go back and like look at the big traumas of your life necessarily. And it's like those moments of shock for me, of feeling like I don't belong here, I'm out of place, you know, kids are attacking each other and I don't know what to do, or the only people I can really speak to have now left and I'm here on my own. Like, those were the shocks of me feeling powerless, of me feeling like a bad person, of self-devaluation, of feeling like all sorts of different shocks. And the call was actually like a moment of relief. That for as much sadness, of course, that I felt that my grandma was passing, the dominant emotion for me as a human was, oh my God, I can leave. And bonus cherry on top, I don't have to look like a bad person for leaving. And like, that's the thing here is like, this has been such a humbling journey.
Because
this is like a valid excuse. This is a valid reason.
You didn't tell anybody that you were having such a hard
time. No, I didn't tell anyone I was having such a hard time. And so this meant that I could leave without quitting, without admitting weakness, without being open about how, like weak and powerless I felt in that situation.
Your like good savior image got to remain intact.
Yes, that got to stay. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, it is funny. And this has been so humbling because so much of it has looked like being so honest with myself about my actual first thoughts. And I've just noticed how much, we'll get into this with the chronic stuff and as we unravel some of these others, how often I have like gaslit myself of believing, of like ignoring the first thought and feeling like the second thought, the like good thought, the better thought, the more evolved feeling is like how I really feel. And it's like skipping those, like whatever you want to call them, the primal reaction, the toddler reaction, like whatever it is, like I realize I've had so many of those in my life that I was just like unaware of. They're just like below the surface.
The phrase that just keeps coming to mind for me, I've been thinking a lot about the past couple of weeks, is like, we are such honest liars. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're just so skilled at like very honest self-deception, you know, like it's not like we're, you know, intentionally deluding ourselves, but and the German New Medicine and, you know, really getting to the that moment of incoherence, the conflict shock requires like a real sobriety. Self-awareness that is very humbling.
It is. And to look at all of these moments where it's like, oh, I wasn't actually grateful, or I wasn't actually being generous, or I wasn't actually okay. I wasn't actually the chill girl. I wasn't actually laid back. I was actually like really pissed off. I was actually really afraid. I was actually, you know, experiencing a lot of shame.
It's often very unflattering. You know, for me now, having like been working with lots of people, and also for myself, it's just like, oh, this is just how we are. You know, like we find out that our grandparents are dying and we feel relief because it gets this is just the human condition where things are, you know, not always super like cute.
No, that has been like my biggest aha moment overall. Mm-hmm. It's been a very humbling process to see like tracks come up and to notice like, oh, I didn't handle that. I thought I was handling this well or really peacefully, but actually I was like freaked the fuck out under the surface.
One piece I just want to note before we move on to the chronic stuff here is because what you experienced there was like a very intense healing phase, right? Like, described a little bit of it here, but I remember from our discussions, like no small thing. And there is like a sort of a slight nuance to when we enter a healing phase, which is where, you know, we put the microbes and the bacteria in our body to work, to, you know, regenerate, replenish, restore, or decompose additional tissue. When we enter the healing phase while we are in a foreign country, you know, in a place that is not, you know, kind of our normal territory, it is very, very common and to be expected that the healing phase will be far more intense than normal. And that's because we've just, you know, we are in contact with foreign bacteria, with foreign microbes that our body is not, you know, sort of intimately attuned to over many, many years. And so it is a more intense experience than if, you know, if you had had the same resolution and experience, but, you know, being in your hometown or whatever. And so that kind of accounts for why, you know, many people have that experience of like, I go away and then I get something crazy. And that will occur if a resolution happens while overseas or recently back from overseas. But it's not like, in a way, it's like, yes, you caught foreign microbes, you know, like there it is true that like you have taken in new microbes, but they are not the cause, right? And that's the really important piece here, is they are not the cause. They never are the cause. They only ever act in the healing phase. But that doesn't mean that there's not like a, you know, a greater intensity when we go overseas. So just to kind of like put that little piece in there for people, because I'm not sure I've talked about that earlier yet.
Yeah, I remember that was super enlightening when we talked about it, because I hadn't heard that either. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Cause it was so intense, more intense than really any other illness I've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I think we went through that and then basically concluded that that wasn't actually, you know, when we were really parsing apart your timeline, that wasn't actually the origin of the more chronic issues. So then we went forward, I think, a few months, right?
Yeah. So we looked at that and realized, no, that was just like one really intense, contained conflict and resolution. And this more chronic stuff, which has been more of the pain, mostly in my head, but in like neck, throat, face, cheeks, eye bones, that type of pain, kind of radiating down. That happened a couple months later. So that's why I'd always in the past had trouble isolating it, because I thought it was this big dramatic Mexico moment. But when I got back, I had to kind of figure out what to do with my life, because I'd been planning to be there a while longer. And so I got a job at a local restaurant. I was like, I'll just waitress for a few months and kind of figure out what's next. And the job ended up being just a super toxic workplace. So there was a lot of like sexual harassment. There was a lot of pressure. It was very chaotic, very hostile between employees. Just like not a great workplace in general. And there was just some weird kind of unsafe things going on too, with like, it turns out they were money launderings. So there were kind of these weird dynamics of like unsavory characters hanging around. And at the time I was so sheltered and naive that I was like, just like telling myself that I was imagining these things for the most part, mm-hmm. of like, oh, this is like, this, there's no way this is happening in like my like cute little suburb, you know, like this isn't that bad. Like this just must be what the real world is like.
Right.
So right. I was just kind
not,
of like,
he's not really sexually harassing me right now.
No, like he's just like not politically correct, or like this is just the way he is, or like he just drank too much today. Like the owner was definitely an alcoholic. And so, yeah, I was making a lot of excuses, but also like getting more and more fed up too, and trying to decide, you know, when I was going to leave. But there was also a lot of like pressure to stay. So I felt like, in that silly way we do, like, oh, I'm carrying this restaurant on my shoulders. Like, what will they do if I go? Or like, they're going to be so disappointed and upset if I quit. Even like people were quitting left and right, and it was a revolving door. Like my story was like, they'll be really mad if I leave. And like, I don't know how I'm going to handle that conversation with them. And they're not a safe person. So I'm really like afraid and like blowing this up in my head of like what the implications would be, what the conversation would look like, what he would say if I would try to quit and everything. And so I just kept putting it off. I was like, I'll quit next month. I'll quit next month. I'll quit next month. And yeah, like building it up in my head. I kept imagining, like, what am I going to say? Should I make this excuse? Like, what if I said this, then he wouldn't get angry? Like, if I positioned it this way, if I did it at the perfect day, there was just a bunch of calculation going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was really a big theme. There was a lot of like calculating and a lot
like
of
trying to foresee like every possible thing.
Yes. Yes. And be like, if I do this, if I pull this off perfectly, no one will get mad. No one will get mad at me. I'll still be like the good, liked employee, but I'll also get to leave this job. And so I finally did quit. After it was about 4 months. So I wasn't there a super long time. I quit after about 4 months. After knowing since day one, like that I don't want to be here. And the next week got back to back to back strep throat. Like got strep throat, went on antibiotics, ran the course of antibiotics the day after it would like all the symptoms would come back. And I didn't connect it to the job at all. Like, you know, obviously when I'm telling this story, it seems like, oh, obviously, mm-hmm. but like, first of all, it didn't seem like that big of a deal to me. It, you know, because number one, the conversation ended up going really well because it turned out they were like about to be evicted. Like the business was crumbling around them. Like, so it didn't really matter that I quit. And number two, like I had had a long history with strep. So I was used to getting strep throat. So it just didn't seem like that out of the ordinary for me. Like I'd been hospitalized for it back when I was a kid, like all of the things. So I was like, oh, here we go again. Like I haven't had it for a few years. And yeah, I had it back to back and then like I got mono and they're like, yeah, maybe we misdiagnosed you and you never had strep. It was just mono. And that's why it kept coming back. And it kind of just felt like it dragged on. Like it was kind of like 4 to 6 months of either having strep or mono and no one really knowing and just kind
and
of.
And what were you experiencing migraines as well?
Yeah. And I just kind of thought that it was like part of being
right.
sick.
Which like I, think just kind of felt vague. I think is an important part too. I think like, you know, it's so easy to like lump symptoms all together
yes.
in one thing. And I think that's a place where people get stuck with Germany medicine. It's like, okay, but like, what do you mean when you say I had mono or
yeah,
right? What do you actually mean? And I think, you know, I spend a lot of time clarifying that with people. It's like, okay, explicitly which symptoms, right? And to parse that out because each symptom is,
yes,
you know, there's particular biological conflicts. And so, yeah, anyway, just to add that in there, like it's a helpful thing of like you were actually, it wasn't just isolated to your throat in those.
Not at all. No, I had a lot of like pain in like my jaw, face, neck, shoulders, and not like the strep throat pain of literally like in your esophagus, but like the tissue pain, which became like one of those chronic markers. Ever since that time, it slowly kind of became chronic. So at first it was like a couple times a year, I have this kind of flare up that to me felt like mono. Like I went down the like medical medium Epstein-Barr virus, you know, rabbit hole for a little while. I was like, oh, it's Epstein-Barr virus. Like that's what I have. And then I was like, oh, is this like somehow caused by parasites that I got in Mexico? Like I had no idea. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, I thought it was recurring mono. That's what it felt like. The feeling I had that I had labeled as mono that summer after quitting, that's what felt like it kept coming back. And at first, so between the time that I was like 19 and 21, it was just like a few times a year. You know, it was like every couple months, this is coming up. And then when I was, you know, 21, 22, 23, that's when it really became chronic and started to feel like, oh, this is just how I feel now most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then that was the case for the next, you know, 5 or so years was just really what I know now, really stumbling over this track so, so frequently that it was just nearly a daily part of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Do you want to talk about the track itself?
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, so we were, I think when we were discussing it, like I'm just trying to remember back to our conversations. Like, I think we were really focusing on like the migraine as like sort of the central symptom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a migraine, and now this is not, you know, totally conclusive because there are multiple things that can, you know, like some things are very cut and dry, you know, like eczema, like separation, but there are some symptoms that, you know, there are multiple possibilities and migraines is one of them. But you know, one of the most common biological conflicts that results in migraines is the a powerlessness conflict or frontal fear conflict. So, you know, sort of a good way of like an image that really illustrates this one very well is you are driving on a highway, you're in the passenger seat, and then you see an oncoming vehicle about to hit your, you know, hit your car, and you're in a car accident, right? So there's this fear coming at you from the front, but there is nothing you can do about it. You have no agency or control over the situation. That would be kind of like a classic example of this conflict. And so when we were talking, you know, I had kind of all these different options in mind, but I could, I think, hear pretty quickly in your language, there was this sense of powerlessness, right? And also of this kind of the inevitability of this danger, this threat coming towards you sort of at all times. And that was occurring originally when you're working at this restaurant, right? And like the quitting. And I think also, you know, you were about 18 at that time, or like almost 19, maybe. So then we divided that in two. And we were just discussing also this theme of quitting in your life. And maybe you could speak to that a little bit of like how this wasn't the first time that you had sort of navigated this you were already set up to like hold so much weight around quitting and what that might mean because of previous life experiences.
Yes. So we talked about, even though this was really the source conflict, there had been a lot of weight that I'd put in the past on quitting. And so we struggled to find the exact dates, I know, but I know that there was, you know, a few times in my childhood that I quit something and it felt like a really big deal. And it felt like something that I'd anticipated for a really long time. And one was quitting doing like piano recitals and doing kind of like this competitive piano thing. And one was quitting figure skating. And in both of those situations, I knew that I wanted to for a long time, but I felt like I was going to disappoint my parents or it was going to be this big deal, or I knew they wanted me to keep doing it. And so I built it up in my head a lot, and I built up the conversation and like, what's the right way to tell them? And like in one of the cases, I like wrote them a letter instead of telling them, cause I was like so intimidated by the conversation. And it's so funny looking back, like they didn't care at all. Like they were perfectly happy for me to quit. But it was that thing coming at me was the situation coming at me or in front
of
me.
It's important, I think, you know, to understand the bigger life pattern, to understand like your unique psychological landscape. So, you know, when we understood sort of maybe the origin, like at 18, and then sort of the broader origin of your kind of life context and this repeating pattern, then I think, you know, the conversation shifted. Okay, well, like how right now? How?
Yeah.
And so then it came about you and your business partner, I think.
Yeah, so we kind of talked. I was like, okay, cool. What do I do with this? Because it's like, this is all great theoretically, but again, still like, where is this coming from in my daily life that it's so consistent?
Right, because you're like, what, 7 years on or something, or even 10 years on.
Yeah.
So how is this still relevant?
Yeah, like, why is this still like one of the biggest things in my life affecting my day to day? And so we talked about some things with my business partner that I wanted to quit, like some things we wanted to quit doing, some dynamics that I wanted to quit. And it was like, oh, okay, maybe that's why this track keeps showing up.
Right. You wanted to quit, in my work. There was like so much tension around what that was.
Yes. It was like, he wants something different. We're not on the same page about this. It has all of these implications. And again, there was that theme of like calculating and like pre-scripting conversations and just going over and over and over again in my head. You know how people talk about dwelling on arguments, like what I would have said, like, if I only had that comeback. That's what this feels to me, but it's like in the future, instead of like thinking about an argument in the past over and over again. And like, oh, I should have said that. Yeah. It's like the future where I keep going over different iterations of the conversation.
It's so interesting. I really love this conflict in particular, because I just personally find it so easy to like hear in people. Like it would be so fascinating to get like 10 women who have the same conflict on the Zoom, because I feel like you would all really like, there is this way of perceiving the world, right? Because now
yeah.
I had this conflict, and so it just becomes the lens through which you filter so much of your life, which yes. is so chronic. And so it's just very interesting, you know, to have such, we all just have these different ways of perceiving the world, and they're so, so influenced by the conflicts that we've had. And obviously our perception determines what conflicts we experience, and then our conflicts sort of solidify that perception further, and it can just kind of grow and grow unless there's like this self-awareness that's brought to it. But yeah. I think and that's kind of where we ended the first session, right?
Yeah. And so it was super powerful, and I had some really potent conversations with my business partner that really moved the needle, and experienced, you know, I did some of the kind of like visualization around that original conflict. And I would say that it helped my pain about 70%. So a dramatic improvement, but not a 100% improvement.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is incredible. I'm feeling so much better. But like, what's this last piece?
Yeah. When did we talk again? Was it a month later?
It was a month later. So we'd spoken in May, and then we talked again in June. So a month later. And I was like, okay, it's way lower when it happens, you know, it's fewer days, you know, of the month. And also when it happens, it's much less intense. Mm-hmm. So that's life changing. Like I want to be really clear about that, that's like a life changing amount of resolution. Like, even if that was all that we ever got to, that would like change the rest of my life and how I experience.
One of my teachers, Gilbert, he always says like, you have to celebrate like every percentage.
You know?
Sometimes it's not 100, but you have to celebrate
every percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was amazing. And I was like, what about this is missing? And what we identified in that second conversation, which I just want to say, like, I think that gap had to happen because, like I said at the beginning, my pain was so constant that it was really challenging to find tracks because it was constant.
Right.
Because so it was like the
are really, you know, it's, you want to identify when does something come and when does it go? And if you're so in like the ever presence, you know, all this, yes. it can be challenging to discern that. So a downgrading can really help you sort of chunk it out a little bit more. And I remember, I really like vividly remember that session with you. I think because we only did half an hour. So it was like, we were like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
Got to get through. And kind of just like, I think you saying like, you know, I can't see it. Like, I don't get it. Like we went basically, I was like, all right, well, when was the most recent? And that's where we started being told two different stories. And I just want to, you know, maybe just say to the person listening, and maybe, because maybe you can tell both the stories. So what I'm doing when I'm, you know, in a session with you, and what, you know, people listening can do for themselves or for other people in their lives, is asking the question, what is the same here? Like, I'm trying to filter for sameness. What is the, you know, these are the stories that you're going to tell, like, they're two at the content level, they're two different experiences, but in the way you were thinking about it, perceiving it, perseverating on it, you know, there had to be a thread of similarity. And so that's what I was filtering for when you were telling me these stories. So maybe you can tell the stories, and then, you know, we can kind of speak about the dots that connected.
Yeah. Can you remind me what they were? Like, two specific events?
Yes. I think that one was, you were driving with your parents. Yes. And one was you had two friends visiting or something.
And
yes, I think I remember what this one, I think that gives me enough. So the one was, the second call we had, I was up staying with my parents. So I don't live in my home state, and my husband and I were up visiting for a few weeks. And so I was driving with them, and they mentioned, like, hey, let's go grab lunch at this place. Like, how does that sound to everyone? And I didn't want to go. Like, that was the like reality of the initial reaction, but I didn't want to say that. And it's the, like, it was like, I want to be flexible. Like, they're the ones driving. Like, I'm not in like the position of power. Like, they're my parents. I don't, you know, they've been hosting us. Like, I should just go with the flow and go where they want to go. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And I started imagining, like, well, could I say, like, I could go to the restaurant and like not eat anything, because I don't want to eat the food at this place. Like, would that be okay? Or what if I said, like, we could eat out on the patio, because I really felt like being outside and like feel like being in this really noisy place. And I was like tumbling these, like, what could I say at the restaurant? What could I say to the waitress? Like, what could be a way that I could kind of half get out of the situation, but still go along and be like the good daughter? And I felt this like wave of fatigue and this kind of like lymph tenderness, like in my neck. And that was kind of the start of like a little tiny mini flare up of this track. And so that was one of the conversations that we had, that you were able to kind of help me see what the thought was. Cause in my original telling of the story to you, it was much less granular. Right. I was like, I was driving with my parents. They wanted to go to this place. I didn't really want to go to this place.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was the whole story. Like, what else is there to tell?
And I probably, you know, it's like, then I'm drilling you with questions like, okay, well, exactly how did you think about it and which moment and what did you, you know, it's not, what's less important is like what you could film with a video camera, right? What's more important is what's going on inside your head. That experience.
Yeah. And the other one, this was kind of on this same trip. We were with my husband's family and staying in this this home with them. So it was like this big house, and my husband and I had a room, and my father-in-law mentioned that so we actually had two homes next door, because my husband's from a really big family, and so we had two homes next door to each other, and we were in one of them with our own room and attached bathroom. And my father-in-law mentioned that there were some issues with the other house. Like, the other house, the air conditioning wasn't working, and there'd been like an issue with one of the toilets and this stuff. So he was like mentioning the possibility that everyone in that house might have to like come stay in the house that we were staying in all together. And I was not thrilled about that. Like, that was not like how I had pictured the vacation experience going, right? And so it was, again, I like didn't want to say anything. Like, of course this is fine, of course they can come, like we can all pile into one house, like of course it's no big deal, like of course they shouldn't have to deal with not having air conditioning, that's miserable. Like, that was what I was saying and what I wanted to believe that I felt, right? That's the humbling thing about this.
Yeah.
It's like when you find out your own bitchiness, you're like, actually, I want my own rims. And so it was a lot of like, again, seeing the situation coming at me, that was the sameness, tumbling like different options in my head without a big willingness to voice them. So it's like these calculations happening in my head of how I can manipulate the situation without saying anything, without rocking the boat, without making anyone feel uncomfortable, without being selfish. Like, we're like, oh, that's the thread. So it actually isn't the quitting, which we thought was kind of the theme from that first conversation. What it actually is like the calculation of seeing a situation, not wanting to have any power in it, because taking the power would be being a bitch, being controlling, being aggressive, being too direct, being selfish, being high maintenance. So it's like a chosen powerlessness of like, I can't say anything. Feels very like
in order to maintain a particular image.
Yes. Yes. But then like tumbling all of the different scenarios in my head. Like, I think I told you, it feels like a rock tumbler, like as a kid, mm-hmm. it feels like this rock tumbler of these different like iterations moving around in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And what happened after that session? After you kind of like had the, I don't know, insight to like get even more like obsessively specific every time you noticed a symptom.
I feel like that blew it wide open. Like that gave me like the last, you know, the last bit of clarity that was still a little fuzzy after the first session. Like at the first session, we'd really found the original conflict. But the track wasn't clear enough for me to isolate it consistently.
Yeah.
And now like I can see it within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know what it feels like in my brain. I know the flavor of the thought. Like I know, I just can see it right away. I'm like, oh, there it is. If I don't do anything about it, like if I let myself keep tumbling that rock tumbler,
yeah,
then I start to feel some like pain and fatigue, like within 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's so much clarity, most of the time I'm able to like either choose control, be like, actually, I'm not going to choose powerlessness in this situation because it isn't actually real 95% of the time. I mm-hmm. do actually have power here.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm just not going to let my brain go down the calculation route. If I'm truly not going to say anything, I'm going to be in like actual acceptance versus mm-hmm. like calculating acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But just feeling the flavor of the thoughts and like knowing the sensation of like how they feel in my brain and like the rhythm of them.
That was something I guess, yeah, we didn't speak about too, but I do this so much with people. It's like, okay, so we, you know, we kind of isolate what is it you're thinking about, but then it's yeah. so much, it's how do you go about thinking about that thing? You know, there very much is, there's, it depends if you're like a visual thinker or like auditory or it's more like sensory for you, but everyone has their own unique way. Like what's your recipe for doing it, right? Yes. Like there's like a certain beat to your thoughts, or there's certain pictures that you show, or there's, you know, you hear a voice on this side or that side, or you picture somebody above you or right in front of you or whatever it is. And it's like that level of self-awareness that you know, I think it does is the magic trick, you know, that just turns it off. And you know, it can take a little while, but I love this story so much because, you know, this is, I think, what it takes to translate Dr. Homer's map. You know, it's like, he's not incorrect when he says that this is a fear and powerlessness conflict, but that's irrelevant unless you can translate that into what's your unique flavor of that? You know, how does Sarah go about doing this inside of her head? And that, that's like the art, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's a game changer. And I'm so grateful for this work. And it's so important because I've read those words, right? I read fear, powerless conflict. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. Like, I know what fear is. I know what powerlessness is. And it didn't resonate in that framing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And now that you've had this one experience, like you kind of get the taste for like how gritty you have to go. And so it's just going to be like, boom, boom, boom in the future, whenever you have a symptom, you know, most likely. So have you, like you're pretty much this kind of moved on from this, this chronic pattern.
Yeah. So in the 2 months that we've spoken, I've only experienced the pain twice, and both times I was completely aware of where it was coming from. Wow. I think I messaged you about one of them where I was like, here's, you know, I just saw what it was and I knew what the situation was and I just didn't get out of the thought. It took me a little bit to get out of the thought.
Is that the one that where, your husband just looked at you? You should tell that story because that's pretty funny. What did he say to you? Like you can choose to not be.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Yes. So we were in the car, and we'd planned this day, this like little day trip, mm-hmm. That I'd really been looking forward to. And, we basically got a text from someone that meant we were possibly going to have to cut it short a little bit. We felt obligated to cut it short in order to make time to go see these other people. Mm-hmm. And so there was very much this track showing up of like, okay, if I word the perfect text response, can we get out of seeing them? Like if I come up with the perfect excuse, can we skip seeing them, but they also don't feel bad? Like it was that very calculating energy of I'm unwilling to just say what I want. I have to find some other way around it or just give up my power completely and go along with, you know, pleasing their desires and cutting this day trip short. And the pain came on like pretty intensely, actually. I think because I was so disappointed about this vision for this day trip changing. Like I was so it felt so crushing to me that I was so bummed about this and felt like it was going to ruin this whole experience. And then the pain came up and then I felt like the pain was going to ruin the whole experience. And so it felt like this kind of little mini spiral of, which was just creating more pain. And I'm like crying in the car, like, why did this have to happen? Why am I in so much pain today? It's been so much better lately. Just like having my like victim moment. And my husband looks at me and he's like, you are fully capable of choosing to make this go away right now. I was like, shit.
Like, yeah.
I'm so grateful for that because it really did stop me in my tracks. Mm-hmm. And like, he really meant it, like with a lot of love, was like, you're not powerless here. Like you don't actually have to stay here. It doesn't have to ruin the day at all. And I was able to kind of like somatically move through it in about 5 minutes. Like we pulled over because I wanted to be able to kind of move my body. Mm-hmm. And I was just like breathing a lot. I was stretching. I was really letting myself cry and like touching the places on my body that I felt pain and just kind of like using energy to like move it out. Mm-hmm. And it was so powerful.
Yeah.
Like it really made me feel powerful, which is the exact like opposite of what the source of this conflict is, which is really cool. So that was like a wild experience and one that I kind of used as like a touchstone a lot. Like whenever I feel like doubt in the back of my mind of like, is this going to come back? Is this just like, I don't know. Is this just luck for a couple of months or something? Like I really like used that as like, mm-hmm. that's how much like power I have within my body. That's how wise my body is. That's like how true this system is. And so that was a really cool experience.
Totally. And so much better than, you know, having had that conversation and then never having a symptom again. Like there is a gift, I think, and sometimes things taking a little while because I mean, I think I just wrote about this yesterday. Like there is, I don't think anything that really compares to having a symptom and then witnessing it vanish in, you know, a matter of seconds or minutes because of your, mm-hmm. you know, conscious awareness and choice. Like just the experience of how much power, like your just innate power we all have, and it's one thing to like believe that. And then it's another to be like, oh damn, like I really know that now. So yeah, so cool. I love it. Thank you so much. Is there anything you want to say, or do you feel complete? All these stories are just so good.
I think we covered a lot. I feel good. I feel like I shared all of the ahas I've had along the way. And yeah, I hope that it's helpful for someone who was in the same boat that I was, of like feeling like my symptoms are too vague and constant to unravel them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took a little bit, but we still got there, like into the specifics and into the granular stuff. And yeah, I had no idea that that was there. Like, it didn't feel possible. I was like, I've done them trying to remember childhood trauma thing. I've done that. And this was really helpful.
Thank you for listening. You can find the link to Sarah's Instagram in the show notes and to mine as well. Thank you for listening. And, you know, thank you to everyone who has been sharing this podcast. As of last week, we hit over 50,000 downloads, which is a pretty big deal for, you know, a relatively small number of episodes that are out. And yeah, I hope that means that you're all enjoying it and getting a lot out of these stories. And please, you know, keep sharing. I really do, you know, believe that this information, that the five biological laws is, you know, how we get free. And I do also really understand that learning German New Medicine is not easy. It's not, you know, often immediate, and it does take, you know, some tenacity and perseverance to really get a handle on the five biological laws and the special biological programs, and then, you know, what the fuck you actually do with it from there. So just, yeah, thank you so much for really taking the time to learn this information and to listen to all these stories. And I hope that they're insightful and helping you all in your journey. So yeah, stay tuned for what I hope will be many, many, many more.